Space, the final frontier. These are the songs of the Eurovision Song Contest. Its lifelong mission? To explore the boundaries of music. To seek out strange new sounds. To boldly win that coveted glass trophy. Welcome to Eurovision in Space. This is ESC 101. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to ESC 101, your home of Eurovision history and obscurity. This is the podcast where we take a look at the Eurovision Song Contest throughout the years to uncover the story behind the world's largest international televised music competition. Welcome to episode 21. My name is Alexander. This week is a special episode, as it's not just me this week. I will also be joined by some of the foremost experts of space exploration. But before we are joined by our guests, let's dive into some context behind the topic of this week's episode. Of course, I can't cover the entire history of space exploration, otherwise this would turn into a space exploration podcast, and we already have lots of those to choose from. I highly recommend the Mates in Space podcast, which we'll discuss a little later on. Instead, I will start with the basic foundations of space exploration, which for our purposes begins in 1944. Yes, there were telescopes and observatories before that, and the human eye before that, but that's thousands of years of history, and we don't have time for that. So 1944 will have to do. The first man-made object reaches outer space in 1944, a German V-2 rocket. Ignoring the wartime implications of 1940s Germany sending rockets into space, this was a huge development in human history. Technology, which only 40 years prior to this was just starting to allow humans to fly in the air with relative safety, this is now gaining the ability to leave the atmosphere altogether. Humans are no longer bound by the planet that keeps them grounded. The first successful orbital launch occurred 13 years after the V-2 rocket with the Sputnik 1 satellite launched by the Soviet Union. This launch was spurred by an article published in a youth magazine which, paired with the one-upism arising after the end of the Second World War, inspired different parts of the world to determine which country had the biggest rocket, or rather, which one could get to space first. A space race, if you will. It looked like the Soviet Union was gaining speed, but in the end, it was the United States of America that got humans to step foot on the moon first, so by their own definition, they won the race. After the space race, a number of other accomplishments took place, including the first space station, Salyut 1, launched on April 19, 1971, as well as a bunch of planetary exploration projects in the 1970s and 1980s. Then there was the launch of the Mars Pathfinder, which was the first operational rover on another planet, launched on July 1, 1997. Then the launch of the International Space Station, which was the first multinational space station, launched on November 20th, 1998. A bunch of more stuff happened. Then something I actually had no idea that happened. We figured out how to grow food in space, which is really cool. We managed to grow a head of lettuce on August 10th, 2015, and then there was a bunch of stuff that happened after that, and here we are in 2024. That's basically my badly condensed history of space exploration. Telescopes, war, rocket measuring contest, international cooperation, and lettuce. Now that I've either infuriated or bored you, let's move away from growing lettuce in space and turn our eyes downwards back to Earth and see what humans are up to on the surface. Oh look, it's the Eurovision Song Contest. Of course, the Eurovision Song Contest started in 1956, and good news for space enthusiasts, Eurovision artists are already referencing outer space in their songs, right from the first contest. I think the real winner of the space race is the Eurovision Song Contest, as they began referencing space a year before Sputnik 1 was even launched. Ha! Take that, Soviet Union! Now, of course, if we counted every single song that arbitrarily had the word sun, moon, or stars in it, we would be here for several days. Instead, I ask that you indulge me in looking at one Eurovision entry per decade which actually touches on an outer space theme, or at least attempts to. We begin in the 1950s, and this is one of the trickiest decades to work with, so please bear with me. This entry, at its essence, has nothing to do with space, but I think it's still important to examine. I'm referring to the third entry in the Eurovision Song Contest in 1956, Belgium's first song entitled Monsieur le Noyer de la Seine, The Drowned Men of the River Seine, sung by Foot Leclerc. This song has absolutely nothing to do with outer space. Rather, this song is an expression of depression, which in 2024 makes me want to get this man to a hospital immediately. There is a single line which references the sun and the moon. The lyrics translated into English read, "The sun for the rich, the moon for the clochard," with clochard being a term for beggar or vagrant. Here's a clip of the song.
Je n'ai connu l'amour que sur un lit de pierre. Le soleil pour les riches, la lune pour les gueux. Pourquoi si tout le monde la triche? Jouer encore le jeu. Messieurs, noyés de la Seine.
The use of the sun and moon as expressions of light and dark is a prime example of humanity using the two celestial bodies as an artistic representation, which is easily accessible to everyone while serving as something otherworldly. The two celestial bodies that are clearly seen by the naked eye serve as points of wonder and inspiration, with some deeming them to be of the heavens, beyond the world we live in. In this entry, the sun being reserved for the rich highlights the gleam of wealth. The shine of newness and prosperity, where the gold coins of the aristocracy shine as bright as their fireplaces and solariums. The moon, resembling the symbol of night and darkness, is reserved for those hiding the shames of their failures. The beggars and vagrants of the world finding spots in the shadows to hide themselves from the disapproving stare of society, emerging under moonlight only to fight and survive in the depths of their poverty. While I'm not sure which category the singer of Belgium's first song at Eurovision falls under, it seems like his depression casts him out of both categories, perhaps into a lightless void like the center of a black hole. What we do know is that the song has nothing to do with exploring the moon or growing lettuce in space, but rather serving as the first instance of using celestial bodies to express something earthly. While endless Eurovision entries make use of the sun, moon, and stars to express their love for someone or to use them as references to light and darkness, there are not that many that directly reference or express themes centered on space exploration. But fear not, the 1960s come upon us, and the space race is in full swing. The year is 1967, and we are 2 years away from landing humans on the moon. But there is some anxiety around all this rocket technology. Enter Monaco and Minouche Barelli with the song Boom Bada Boom.
Avant de me faire la peau, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Boom Bada Boom! Boom Boom! Boom Bada Boom! Boom Boom! Si mes jours me sont comptés, boom boom! Je ne veux pas seulement aimer Bada Boom! S'il est d'autres paradis, boom!
This song features all the classic elements of a rocket launch: a countdown sequence, a big explosion, and a fear of nuclear annihilation. That's right, it's the swinging 60s, and we have this entry which is all about the big kaboom, the deadly version of the rocket measuring contest between the USA and the USSR. The singer pleads with scientists and government officials to please not blow up the world. The translated lyrics, minus all the booms and the bada booms, say, "Before blowing everything up, leave me the time to love. Still leave me my life, at least 1,001 nights. If my days are counted, I don't only want to love. If there exists other paradises, I want to know them too." The singer clearly wants to live and has a desire to seek other paradises. Perhaps this is a precursor for exploring other planets. Mars does have a beautiful red glow. But while the song isn't exactly about space exploration, it does center on rockets, albeit with nuclear warheads, and that's the closest I could find for a Eurovision entry about space in the 1960s. Eurovision continues to use outer space references sparingly, using them mostly for expressing how vast their love for someone is, but we come to an entry that is undeniably about outer space. Enter into the 1970s, and we find ourselves in the year 1979, with Sweden's entry being sung by Ted Gärdestad, singing the song Satellite, or in English, Satellite. Finally, a direct reference to outer space that isn't about love or atomic bombs. Ted sings a song praising the satellite, an object that orbits a celestial body, for our purposes, Earth. Now, some people may argue that he's singing about another person, but reading the translated lyrics in English, I'm pretty sure that he's actually singing about a real satellite. Quote, "You've been standing at the horizon. You've been watching the sea, wondering if Earth is round, but all you saw was a boat disappearing in the rolling mist. I'm not afraid of flying because above the clouds, heaven's door is ajar. Like Earth and Moon, we're attracted to each other. Please hold me as tight as you can. I feel like a satellite, satellite, oh, like a satellite high up in the sky." Ted is enamored by the ideas of being as free as a satellite, highlighting how satellites are attracted to the people that launch them. Of course, this is because of gravity and how orbits are essentially objects falling constantly. At least, I think that's how orbits work. Again, I'm not a scientist. Clearly, Ted wishes to be a satellite, seeing the Earth from above and exploring the roundness of the Earth and her beauty from above. It's such a beautiful scientific sentiment that truly promotes the curiosity and desire of humanity to reach beyond our atmosphere and understand our place in the solar system and beyond. However, 2 years later, Eurovision does a complete 180 and plunges into the Dark Ages, falling into superstition and nonsensical paranoia. But don't panic, Ireland comes in to save the day. I am, of course, referring to their entry in 1981 entitled Horoscopes, sung by Sheba, the trio consisting of Francis Campbell, Maxi, no last name, and Marian Fawcett. Now, for those of you who believe in and take horoscopes seriously, I'm going to take this time to apologize slash not apologize for my lack of enthusiasm for horoscopes. I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. All I'm saying is that I don't take horoscopes seriously, and this trio doesn't either. Humans have looked to the stars for many things: artistic inspiration, scientific curiosity, and in this case, strange superstition. Sheba comes in to bring the listener back to scientific reality by basically denouncing the concept of horoscopes, imploring people to abandon superstition and instead take control of their own life. And since they sing it in English, I'm going to let Sheba do the talking. I will disagree with one part of their lyrics. While humans are terrestrial, Earth itself is celestial. It is a celestial body by definition, and I think humans don't have to keep their feet on the ground, otherwise I would not have been able to visit Europe. Airplanes are wonderful and require my feet to leave the ground. But I do agree with their overall take on horoscopes. Outer space is filled with so many wonderful things. Moons, stars, quasars, black holes. But the one thing it is not filled with is the power to control your life. Just as Sheba says, don't let the planets take control of our lives. It's we, not the stars above, who write our horoscopes. Our destinies are in our own hands. Speaking of taking control, I think I've reached the limit of my scientific knowledge, and I think I need to call in a few experts to lend me a hand. Let's go ahead and establish a connection with the PEAS Inner Network to contact our very first guest to the podcast. This is ESC 101 podcast, transmitting a communications link to the P's inner network. Mates in space, do you read me?
Hello, this is Mates in space. Do you copy?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello, hello.
Bonjour, mon ami. Oui, oui. Oh, I'm speaking French now. Oh, okay. Hello, I'm here. I hear you loud and clear. In English, I promise.
Sehr gut.
Yes, I copy. Hello, mates in space. I am hearing you loud and clear. Welcome to ESC 101 podcast. For those of you who may not be familiar with your work, could you introduce yourselves, tell us about Mates in Space, and reveal the secret to your creative genius, because I've got to know.
I would like to make it all about me, and you two are just also there.
Oh, well, sorry. We always do. Do you want me to kick off, Jack?
Oui, oui.
Thank you very much for having us on ESC 101. It's a pleasure to be here in Canada. I appreciate you flying us out for the opportunity to come on this podcast. It's been obviously a long flight, but worth it. And then immediately turn around and fly back to Australia.
I hope you're used to the cold.
Oh, yes. Well, I've been preparing. I actually spent last night watching your national sport of croconole.
What?
Oh my goodness, you don't know croconole? Are you a real Canadian?
Even the Canadian doesn't know what you're talking about.
It's the board game version of curling.
Oh,
curling. Okay, see, I know what curling is. You're using your weird Australian lingo. Your accent confuses me.
Yeah, that's okay. Croconole sounds like it should be an Australian word more than a Canadian word anyway, so I'll forgive you.
Absolutely does. Anyway, I'm Jack. Is everyone knows Jack. Jack is the center of most people's universe. And I don't know how else to introduce me except to say, here's Justin as well, watching Croconole.
Hello.
Thank you so much for having us.
My name is Justin, and I am a co-host of the Mates in Space podcast. My job is to wrangle Jack.
My job is to be wrangled.
I'll remind our listeners that this Jack is the same Jack Eaton that I promote at least once a month
and
the Eurovision Travel Guide series. Former co-host of the Deuce Bomb podcast and one half to one third of the Eurovision Forever project.
Yeah, that's true. I am one third.
So yes, this is the same Jack Eaton that I get to talk about all the time. So yeah, welcome to the two of you.
Don't crowd me. Stop. Don't. I'm not giving autographs. Don't crowd me. I can't. It's too much. It's too much. Stop. Calm down.
I'll give you however many autographs you want.
That would be very appreciated. So tell us about Mates in Space. So what exactly is Mates in Space?
Sure. So Mates in Space is the show about how we're going to get to space without taking all of Earth's bull honky with us. I'm self-censoring here. We are a space podcast, ostensibly, although we very much bend the rules of that and head up to space on our own terms, as all of us should be doing. We end up being a show about society and culture and aliens and UFOs, much more than we ever really talk about the things other space podcasts talk about.
We've talked about a lot of pop culture, a lot of pop culture.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's very hard to have a, even if it was going to be a standard space podcast, putting you in as co-host means that we're just going to talk about pop culture the whole time anyway.
I've done a Katharine Hepburn impression more times than I can count on our space podcast. I really have.
My favorite impression of yours is Jennifer Coolidge when you did Space Reagan. And it was like, wow.
Oh, that's the other one I do quite a bit. Wow. There's so many lasers up here. It's crazy. She likes to show off everyone.
We have a fourth person on the call. It's Jennifer Coolidge.
Yes. Yeah, this is our co-host Jennifer Coolidge.
Yeah, so there's three of us. Jennifer not always there.
That would be fantastic. There's three of us and then Jennifer Coolidge. Yeah, there we go. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your expertise in space exploration and, of course, your opinions on some of the Eurovision entries that we're going to be covering this week.
I wouldn't say expertise in space. I am skilled with Google.
Yes, he can Google anything. Like, he just knows how to do it.
Just name a thing, name any phrase I can type it into Google.
Oh my God. Janet Reno Dance Party SNL 1998.
Okay, I can't type that one into Google, but you've caught me out on that one. It's okay. I'm sure there's others.
It's the one phrase you can't Google.
What? Why can't you Google that one?
Unfortunately, I don't have an L on my keyboard. So if you can do any other 25 letters.
You could still do Janet Reno Dance Party Saturday Night 1998.
Yeah, there you go. So I have just explained to our listeners a brief history of space exploration, which was kind of not really long. It was really bad. You two would have done a much better job, but you know, I'm not going to ask you to do the whole episode because that'll be a little bit too lazy on my part. So we'll leave it there. And we just covered four Eurovision entries that have outer space themes, kind of, sort of. I know a few of them definitely do, but you know, Eurovision doesn't exactly have every single topic under the sun. I mean, at this point, it probably does, but back in the 50s and 60s, you know, not so much. So I'd like to take a break from looking at the entries and pivot towards a more hypothetical scenario and get your expert opinion on the feasibility of it. Because I know that you guys have explored, you know, different types of space things and talking about like lasers and the moon and the stars and all the other space stuff. Again, I'm not a scientist, so this is, again, relying heavily on the two of you.
That's okay.
Here's a scenario, and I would love to get your opinion on it. So let's assume by the year 2100, humans have successfully colonized the moon. The people of the moon love watching the Eurovision Song Contest and have managed to convince the executive supervisor to allow the moon to enter the contest, and they have been doing so for several years. The moon eventually ends up winning the Eurovision Song Contest, and the EBU decides that it would be great PR to forego tradition and the rules and host the following contest on the moon. Assuming that transporting people and equipment will be covered and financially affordable, and an area in on the moon would be designated for an arena, what would the Eurovision Song Contest look like on the moon?
Oh,
I mean, it's a great question.
It is a good question. It would look insane.
I feel like I should kick off my answer to this one by issuing a bit of a mea culpa, because you asked a similar question on our show during our listener Q&A section late last year, and I kind of took this as, great, this is my day off. Jack can answer what Eurovision on the moon sounds like. And I didn't know you were looking for such a thorough logistical explanation, but I'm so appreciative of the opportunity to make amends.
I needed a part two to that because we just need more. We need more Eurovision content on Nates in Space.
Absolutely. So this is a spiritual successor to that conversation. But let's talk about people on the moon in the year 2100, because I love that you've included the detail of the year. Currently in 2024, people live in space in just one place, which is the International Space Station, and they're generally there for less than a year at a time, the only exception being an astronaut called Frank Rubio, who we talked about on our show back in September last year. Rubio spent a record 371 days on the ISS. So when I picture a moon colony, it's only 3 days to travel to the moon. It's not that long, but I'm imagining a population that's growing every year. A lot of migrant workers. Liverpool, the host of Eurovision in 2023, is not a terrible benchmark for a moon colony. So, of course, space Liverpool won't be as big as Earth Liverpool, but like as an important outpost for space nations, like the ISS is today, they'll have access to all the resources. So this is going to be as magnificent a Eurovision as we can have on the moon. How are you feeling about this so far, Jack?
Yeah, I think you've put in a lot more research than I did, because I'm ready to swoop in about the actual contest itself. Yeah, I love the whole algorithm. Not algorithm, that's not the right word.
Vision? I don't know. What do you want to?
Yeah, let's cover that.
Okay, well, allow me to paint a picture for you, a beautiful space picture on the moon for what a lunar base will look like.
Sorry, did you say Waterlooner base will look like? It's now called the Waterlooner base.
For Waterlooner base will look like, that's exceptional. We'll take it. So all ideas for the Waterlooner base are a mix of science and science fiction, because obviously we haven't built on the moon. A lot of the research that's happening now is looking into lunar regolith moon rocks, I should say. I keep saying regolith on our show, and we have to ask for a definition every time. So some researchers suggest that there might just be a series of small self-contained pods. They're low to the ground, they're connected by tunnels, they're not very flashy. In those early days, the pods are built partially from spacecraft taking people to the moon, so the lunar landers themselves. And then they are covered in about 0.5 meter of dirt, lunar dirt, to protect from the radiation of the sun. So we are very much in the dark, but we've got a lot of artificial light that's going to come from fusion reactors that use helium-3. I'm sure this is all what you wanted in your explanation of what Eurovision would look like.
I mean, I asked for scientific and I'm just going along. It's like, yep.
Yeah, you asked for more info. This is, yeah, be careful.
You're getting scientific. Okay. I've bored you stiff. I've bored you completely.
I'm not bored. I'm just confused over all the words you're saying. It's so foreign and non-understandable.
I'm always confused. I don't even know what he's talking about. And I'm his co-host. I'm bored. If it helps, I'm bored.
Okay, I know Jack's getting bored because I can see his eyes glazing over. I can feel the energy leaving the room.
No, the energy's here. It's just...
Oh, okay. It's just Jack's gone.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's weird. You've got these pods that are covered in a layer of dirt, but they're all artificially lit because the sunlight's not getting in. So it looks very like neon. You've got a lot of...
Just like my background.
Exactly like your background, which is Eurovision what year?
In Lisbon 2018. So I attended Lisbon, and so this was me taking a picture in the arena. I was like, ooh, this is like a very galactic-y kind of color scheme. So I figured, why not?
Oh, fantastic. It's very on brand for our podcast as well. So, and this brings us neatly to our Space Eurovision arena, which I know is what you're asking about. There's been a recent proposal that if you were to have any big building on the moon, what you could do is put it inside a giant cone that is spinning to simulate Earth's gravity. So the idea is the speed at which it spins, the centrifugal, I can't remember which, one of those two forces is going to simulate gravity by having it spin. This was recently suggested by Japanese researchers from the Kyoto University and the Kojima Corporation. I do have notes for this episode. I'm not just recalling that.
He has so many notes.
And of course, the building will be regularly restocked with organic, locally sourced oxygen, lovingly extracted from the moon rocks. And it'll be supplemented by moss and lichen grown on the walls. So you've got like neon mixed with moss is your framework for your environment.
That actually sounds really cool.
It's rad as hell.
I'm not going to lie. Like, thinking of that as a concept for the Eurovision stage, I'm thinking, like, if you have this, like, rotating thing, you can have, like, cameras on the walls. You could, like, have, like, a 360 view.
Yeah.
So that you don't have to worry about having, like, people running up to the stage and doing that, you know, that rotation thing.
Yeah.
Because there's far too many times where I see the cameraman in the shot and I'm just like, no, you're not supposed to be there. Go away. But instead, you just have it in the arena. The arena is the camera.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So... the whole thing is spinning. So in order to have a shot that rotates, all you need to do is find a way to make that camera stay still. So if you were to just have a drone hover in the same spot in the air.
Which I'm sure we'd be figured out by 2100.
I'm hoping we can figure out how to have a stationary camera by the year 2100. I've not found one yet, but we'll figure it out by then, I'm sure. But yeah, so the Eurovision Song Contest, I feel like it's got a lot of elements of modern Eurovision. Jack, you can probably speak to this a bit more, but there's a lot to go off there in terms of like visual aesthetic that I'm sure will come up, if not in the entries themselves, in the kind of touristy cards that sit between each entry in the live broadcast that are like, come to the moon, we've got lichen.
Come to the moon, we have organic oxygen.
Organic, fresh from the farm.
I think, you know what, there is a certain type of people that would go for that.
Absolutely. Jack, you're just looking perturbed, but non-verbally, which is not so good for podcast.
Yeah. One, I did just wake up. Two, I'm a little bit worried that you two are so excited about space moss at Eurovision.
Okay. Well, there's neon.
We do focus on the moss, but to a lesser extent than you guys seem to be at this exact point in the conversation. I feel like you're sort of losing the whole gay bit of Eurovision where we don't focus on the moss so much.
Are you worried that I'm making the conversation too heterosexual?
I am worried that we're straightening out a little too much.
So does moss have sexuality?
Oh, that's a question. That's a question for... someone smarter than me.
If only, unfortunately, I can't Google lichen because I do not have an L on my keyboard.
You can Google moss. You can Google moss.
Sadly, I cannot type Google into my computer because I don't have an L.
Yeah, there you go. There's no L.
Checkmate.
So, okay. So from Jack's perspective then, on the moon, what would the Eurovision stage, do you think, would look like? Do you think we would go with a nature theme where we would actually have like moss and grass and actual nature on like the no, you're saying no nature?
No.
Jack's vetoing this. Jack is the executive supervisor, unfortunately.
I am. Unfortunately, it is me. I'm still going at 108 years old.
You'd be better than the current one.
Oh, don't. We'll get into that later. That's fine. I feel like if you go to the moon, you don't want to make it look like Earth, right? With all of your plants and stuff. We can do that here. You want to like lean into like the zero gravity. Like you want to be, you know, like you can have six people on stage and they can all float. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be, like, the coolest part of it. I feel like you should lean into the mooniness of it. How many times are you broadcasting Eurovision from the moon? It depends how good they are. I understand that's probably not going to help when you have an audience. You don't want them floating the whole time.
Can you make it so that it's just the stage that's zero gravity and the audience has gravity?
Maybe you're asking the wrong person, Justin.
So, okay, we've got our cone that's spinning. Maybe the cone is inside an arena that is around the outside of the cone? Is that or the cone has a platform in, no, the cone has a platform in the middle that stays still.
The cone could be the stage and have like, it could be like see-through. So you like see through the cone, it would just be like a general.
Yeah.
So that you would, or can we have a reverse cone?
Yeah. So the audience is in the cone. So the audience is staying still and sitting down.
Yeah.
Then in the middle, you have a cylinder, which is the stage, which is not being anchored down where people are floating.
Oh, and then the stage would be right.
Yeah. So this is good. I like this. We're designing people from the Kojima Corporation and the Kyoto University tune in because we have some great designs for how you have a arena setting in the middle of your water lunar base.
Patent pending.
And the European Broadcasting Union, take our idea because I'll be dead by the time you implement it, but
I mean, I've started a podcasting corporation so that I can harvest the youth of all the people around me. So I will still be around in the year 2100.
Unfortunately, it's true.
You're the reason why I'm aging so quickly.
That's what it is. I've extracted. Mm-hmm. No, this is getting very close to like, it's getting very close to QAnon. I don't want to quite head in that direction in this episode. We're only just meeting. We'll save that for like second or third episode that we chat.
Personally, I'm going the hocus pocus method of stealing children and then just inhaling their youth. Like I'm pulling a real Bette Midler.
No, that's worse.
Is it?
You understand how that's worse, right?
No, but it's based in Disney, so it's fine. It's not weird. It's not weird if Disney do it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's weird if Hillary Clinton does it. It's not so weird if Bette Midler does it.
It's awesome that way.
It's fun for the whole family. Did you have like a second question that you wanted to ask us, Alex? Because otherwise we'll stay on this for hours.
Let's shift towards another space-related question before we dive too deeply into American politics. Just letting everybody know, none of us are American, so let's just leave it on the table. So on this hypothetical scenario, people are living on the moon and the base is established and yada yada, and they're big Eurovision fans. How difficult is it to actually transmit the Eurovision Song Contest to televisions and computers on the moon, assuming that electrical infrastructure and broadcast towers are constructed on the moon? Again, the underlying question, is there cell phone service on the moon? Is there like radio broadcasting service on the moon? Can I get like cable and HBO on the moon?
Okay, so in terms of transmitting shows to the moon, we already transmit a lot of data via satellites. That's how we're receiving TV shows. It's how we're on this call. Sorry to break the kayfabe of you having flown us to Canada.
You're just in a different room. It's fine.
Exactly. It's relatively trivial to transmit a TV show to the moon. I mean, in 1969, obviously, we received live footage from the Apollo mission as it touched down.
See, I didn't know about that. Was that actually live or was that like a pre-recorded, they then transmitted, then put on TV, or that was actually live?
That was live. And because of where the moon was relative to the rest of the world, that was actually relayed from a radar dish in Australia. So this is like a big Australian claim to fame in space.
The dish. We made a movie about it.
We made a film starring Sam Neill, our favorite, not really Australian.
That's incredible, actually. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's a big, like in terms of Australia's space pride, the intricacies of the live broadcast of the Apollo mission are like That's very much our domain. Sending a message from Earth to the moon and back only adds a delay of about 2.5 seconds. So when it comes to the Eurovision vote, you'll probably hear hello moon base calling with less lag than you get from a lot of countries anyway. Like, there's a lot of nations that won't respond as quickly as the moon base.
It's about 6.5 times faster than the link to Moldova every year.
Yeah, exactly. As for phone service, so you've kind of, there's internet broadcast and TV broadcast. There's also the question of cell phone networks. There isn't a cell phone network on the moon yet, but there probably will be by the end of 2024. So back in 2022, NASA announced a partnership with Nokia to set up a 4G network ahead of the Artemis flyby, which is going to happen next year, 2025. We've talked about that on our show. So that the astronauts are going to do basically a lap of the moon and come back. And by that point, the hope is that there will be a cell phone network locally on the moon, which is, I don't know how useful that is, having a, like, can they text each other from opposite sides of the moon? I don't know if that helps.
They could televote for Eurovision if they're on a space mission and the Eurovision Song Contest is on. It's like, I forgot to vote. I need to vote for San Marino. Let's hurry up. Let's go, go, go.
Oh, you and San Marino, I swear.
I have to throw it in there. I have to.
I know. You're only human.
Just like you in Sweden.
Well, I'm not biased. I'm just balanced.
You have a
anyway,
flag
sorry.
Right behind you.
You do, in fact, have a Swedish flag over your shoulder.
I also have one on the wall next to me, but a really big one. But yes, carry on. I've lost that argument, haven't I?
You've also got an Australian flag, and in the corner of the Australian flag, a UK flag. So you're representing a lot of nations.
Don't get me started on that bit, but yes, that's true.
But yeah, so presumably they'll be able to televote if they're there. They're traveling for 3 days and then 3 days back. So within the 6 days, if the Eurovision Song Contest in 2025 coincides with that, hopefully we can have some televotes from the moon.
Wouldn't that be so cool?
That would be actually an interesting question, because I guess it's like, because we have a rest of the world vote, but the moon's not part of the world. It's its own celestial body.
That's true. So rest of the world, we either need to expand that to rest of the the galaxy, the rest of the universe.
Solar system.
Well, let's not open it up to rest of the solar system, because that is purely setting us up to have to, when we inevitably find alien life a couple of galaxies away, then have to go, oh, okay, rest of the universe. Geez.
Do we want people from Sigma 5 voting at the Eurovision Song Contest?
Kang and Kodos televoting.
I think this is the vision for Europe that was initially mentioned at the inception of the competition. Europe now includes Australia. Why can't it include the moon? Why can't it include Sigil 5 or whatever?
That's the thing I was going to say, though. It's already annoying enough when you watch Eurovision and they go, good evening, Europe. Good morning, Australia. And we're like, we get it. Like, it's morning here. Can you imagine what they're going to say on the moon? They're going to be like, good evening, Europe.
Good afternoon. They only have one more.
Yeah, I mean, but like every country's going to want to say it the first time. They're going to do so many memes about it. Someone will be wearing like a moon mask. Someone will be like, oh, look, I can see you.
I mean, like as a Canadian, I always have to say like, good evening, Europe. Good morning, Australia. Good afternoon, Canada. Like, because Eurovision's broadcasted in like the middle of the afternoon for us.
Yeah. Oh, you're so lucky. God, I'm so sick of getting up at 3 a.m.
But it's the greatest show on earth.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I would actually have seen a Eurovision recently had that been the case. I apologize.
People listening on the podcast cannot see my facial expression. It is of utter shock and disbelief. And
Jack's the voice of Eurovision and I'm the voice of space. We have, look, I like sub Eurovision songs. I must admit I'm not a Eurovision expert. Can I redeem myself momentarily?
Yes.
Jack has sent me the Croatian
almost entry,
or a potential Croatian entry, and I love it. I will, if that makes it into Eurovision, I'm watching the whole thing. My previous favorite entry in Eurovision was, of course, Wolves of the Sea by Latvia in 2008. So I have a steeped history. I'm getting booted from the podcast, aren't I?
So if I asked you to name every single winner in yearly order, would you be able to do it?
Oh, certainly, with Jack's help. I could definitely do that with Jack's help.
I don't even know if he won. If he knows who won last year,
Sweden. No.
Okay. Okay.
You're fine. You're fine.
Good. No, you're good. You're good. You're good.
I've met you before, Jack. This isn't up for.
I did not shut up about that one. Look at the flag. Look at the flag, baby.
At the shocking revelation of Justin's non-watching of Eurovision, I think we need to bring Justin up to speed and bring in some Eurovision entries to take a look at, because I think this lack of Eurovision knowledge is disturbing.
This is why I need a 101. I need to be brought up to speed on Eurovision.
This is why the podcast exists, is to teach Eurovision history.
Exactly. I'm your target audience.
So the first entry that we're going to be taking a look at is technically not a Eurovision entry. I know people are going to be like, but let me rant.
Is that what they're going to be like?
Probably.
That's,
they're going
to be like, bah, 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 that's bah. Exactly. Good impression of your listeners. So
the first entry is from Germany in the year 1996. Now, I know that Eurovision history fans out there are going to scream at me, oh, Germany didn't participate in 1996. They didn't make it past the pre-qualification round. The EBU doesn't count 1996 in Germany's participation record.
I've always been saying that.
Well, the EBU doesn't do a lot of things like pick one winner in 1969 or adequately punish countries that clearly don't follow the rules, and they certainly don't make unique slogans anymore. So as far as the EBU is concerned, not counting Germany's 1996 participation, I say filtered word to that nonsense. Germany participated in 1996, an entry was created and performed. It just didn't make it to the grand final that year. The pre-qualification round is a semi-final, and I will take that argument with me to the grave.
I count it.
I stand by you. As a long-time consumer of Eurovision, as a person that has been...
That's a weird thing to take to the grave.
I absolutely stand by you. I don't, you know...
You're not going to argue that one with me, thank you, because otherwise I'd have to bring out the gloves.
You'd have to bring out any amount of information and immediately defeat me.
There you go. The German entry for 1996 is called Planet of Blue. I wish it would have been in German, because then I could have offended German people with my terrible German skills, but you are saved today.
I'll do it. I'll ruin it.
No, please don't.
I'll ruin it. I'll ruin any language. I'm so good at it.
He really is.
No, it's fine, Jack. Thank you. It's okay.
All right. But if you need me for Cantonese, I'm available.
Here is Planet of Blues sung by Lyon. So despite the English title, the song is in German, and I do have the translated lyrics available. The translated lyrics read, "Today I'm dashing up to space, beam me up with a big bang, and the countdown's on. The countdown's on. Walking around weightlessly, wanting to see you from above, you're wonderful. Planet of Blue, I love you." There's a lot of repeated lyrics about countdowns and loving the planet blue, but that's basically the gist of the lyrics. What are your thoughts on this entry?
Well, I mean, obviously the lyrics are delightfully nonsense. Beam me up with a big bang is, what's that, Star Trek combined with the inception of that? Like, what is that as a phrase? But I kind of have an unstated, well, it's sort of an unstated rule. I'm going to state it now as a science communicator that my job isn't just to ruin people's days by saying your lyrics are bad. Like, I'm not the Neil deGrasse Tyson tweeting every New Year's. Actually, New Year isn't of any cosmological significance, you know. That said, I mean, I just love the Planet of Blue bit of it. And I can talk about that in a sec, but I feel like I've not let Jack talk much. So, Jack.
I'm still mad this didn't make Eurovision. Like, it did. That was Eurovision. If you have a selection of all the countries together to see who makes the final, you basically have a semi-final. That makes it Eurovision. Germany was at every Eurovision. I totally agree with you, Alexander, 110%. I don't know how this didn't get through. It is so camp. I think it was ahead of its time. I think if you'd put this in, like, 2001, guaranteed top 10 result. Even though it's a bit... I mean, it's not the best song ever written, but it's got everything, right? He's got, like, the... the studded jacket thingy. Oh, I just, yeah.
But it sounds so 90s though. Like it sounds to me like it's pure 90s techno. Like this fits in the 1990s.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know Eurovision's always been behind the times sort of a little bit. Not anymore, but it was.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as I'm aware, the executive supervisor at the time was the one who replaced Frank Neuf, which Frank Neuf was like, he put up with a lot of nonsense. He was a fantastic executive supervisor. And his successor, it was probably all like, oh, I'm just going to like put this in and see if it works. And I think Germany was like just on the edge. Like it just missed qualification, if I remember my history correctly. And actually, funny enough, when I was looking through the history of other relegations, Germany also almost didn't make it. I think it was in 98 because Italy withdrew. And Italy is like, well, we don't want to go in. And then Germany ended up taking their spot. I think it was 1998. Editing me, if that's not correct, then we'll fix that. So that's, I'll make sure I'm informational.
Well, I mean, I've heard a compelling argument that Germany was at Eurovision in 1996.
Just to pull Justin in, the 96 Germany non-qualification is super controversial because it's the only Eurovision ever where Germany was not in the final. Like, Germany is the only country to have attempted to enter every single Eurovision, and the only time they didn't make it was 96. And so everyone's kind of pissed about it because then we could have had one country that's been to every single Eurovision without fail.
I'm convinced.
They were, but officially they weren't.
I'm convinced. And I definitely think this, as you're saying, this feels very 90s, very techno. It feels, you know, if I had to, if you challenge me to name which international song contest this had been entered into, I would say Eurovision without a beat, obviously. So it's a Eurovision song, even if it's only in spirit. My favorite bit, as I kind of hinted at earlier, is the Planet of Blue itself, because that actually is something that has a lot of connection to space beyond just the dashing up to space that he's doing at the top of the song. The idea of Earth as a blue planet is really only something that's been around for a century as like the mainstream interpretation of Earth. Because of course, we don't live on the blue bit, we live on the green bit or the brown bit. So there's been a conception for centuries and centuries and centuries that Earth is a brown planet or a green planet. Then in the 1960s and 70s, NASA went up and took these photos looking back at Earth of a blue planet. I've actually got one behind me in my Zoom background.
Ah,
it's very nice.
Beautiful.
It's fantastic. And in particular, there's this famous photo from the year 1990 called the Pale Blue Dot, which looks back on Earth from 6 billion kilometers away. So they, at the request of astronomer and science communicator Carl Sagan, they turned Voyager around and pointed the cameras back at Earth, and it's this tiny blue speck in the middle of everything else. In 1994, Carl Sagan calls it a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. And I like to think that Leon was drawing on Carl Sagan there with Planet of Blue. Like, Leon's lyrics are all around what Carl said in his famous Pale Blue Dot speech. So this is, I mean, it's both a Eurovision song and a great space song. I really, as much as the countdown's on, doesn't make any sense. Walking around weightlessly, wanting to see you from above.
Well, it's the countdown on because it's the rocket ship that he's going to go up and see the Earth. I mean, this song really, to me, is, it talks about the beauty of seeing Earth from above. I mean, it's talking about wanting to dash up to space to beam me up with a big bang, and the countdown's on for the time that I'm able to do that, and being able to see the wonderful planet Earth. And it's very, it almost feels like it's from the 1960s and 70s in terms of the messaging. So talking about how we want to see the beauty of Earth from space. I mean, we're making a technological leap from basically flying in a rickety flying machine to space shuttles in like the span of 50 years.
Right.
And to have this song in the 90s with a sort of techno beat. I mean, it's very high energy. And I think that's the catalyst of understanding this entry, is that the high energy and the high beat paired with the almost the adrenaline of seeing Earth from space, I think is a perfect pairing. And I think this entry This entry should have advanced. I think whoever decided not to put this entry through is completely ridiculous. I need to see more about the executive supervisor before I judge them to see if they were as incompetent as Clifford Brown, but that's a story for another time. And yeah, I absolutely love this entry.
Yeah, I mean, I really totally agree with everything you said there. I mean, the 60s and 70s space exploration really had a huge impact on culture, on music, in countless ways that obviously we unpack some of those on our podcast. But, you know, you've got...
Oh, good cross promotion.
That
well
idea
done.
Of
well
your...
Done.
Your
That's seamless.
Thank you. Yeah, that was seamless. But the idea of you're floating in this rickety ship, you know, floating in a tin can, as David Bowie said in... is it Ground Control to Major Tom? What's that song called?
Sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh no, that's Life on Mars.
He wrote two. He famously wrote two songs about space in that era.
Little obsessed.
Little bit, yeah. Back off. You know, play hard to get, David Bowie.
We get it. You want to go to space?
Space will have you eventually. Yeah. No, I think it's. I think it's a great entry. I want to redeem Leon in everyone's eyes. I don't know anything about Leon, but Leon, you nailed it.
Maybe a future episode for ESC 101.
Well, you didn't hear the gossip. No, I'm just kidding.
What?
No, go ahead. Share the gossip.
Jack, I can't believe
I don't have any gossip. I was just trying to put Justin on the spot.
I can't believe it. I've never stood by Leon. I don't know this man.
There we go.
All right, Alexander, you now need to Google Leon and see if there's any yep. pending criminal cases and then edit yes, Justin
thank
accordingly.
You. Thank you. I've so given you right two alternate takes, so feel free to just use one of the two.
It's like alternate universes. Which one shall I choose?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Or just choose to cancel me by putting the wrong version. Yeah, fantastic.
See, no, I enjoy your work too much. I can't cancel you because your work is too entertaining and too wonderfully engaging.
Okay, well, that's wonderful and also horribly sycophantic, so let's move on.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the next entry, which comes from the 2000s. So I'll admit, I found like two entries that even remotely talked about space things, one of which mentioned Galileo, but considering they kept mispronouncing his name, I'm going to go with the alternate entry from Latvia 2003. And thank goodness this isn't Latvia 2002. Otherwise, Jack would go on a rampage and probably have my podcast shut down for crimes against humanity.
I will end you. I will end you if you make me listen to you know what.
I could start having this tune because I know it.
Justin, we'll fill you in later.
But it brought us to Latvia 2008, again, my favorite Eurovision song. So
it all comes back to Latvia eventually, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
So it all comes back to Latvia. So here is the 2003 entry from Latvia entitled Hello from Mars, sung by FLY.
Life is a mystery. Like a perfect harmony. No one knows that day when love will come and set you free. This is gonna be. This is gonna be the day that we will be. We won't have come so down to pass to say hello from Mars.
Wow.
Oh dear.
I mean,
that got more points than the UK that year.
I love it. I think
what?
We're on the same page, right? We love this song.
So I will say I enjoyed the stage background because it had like stars and very like galactic colors. Like it felt like I was in like a nebula and it felt very outer spacey. That I did like.
I can't believe they dared to open a line with Life is a Mystery, which is clearly copyright Madonna.
Madonna's just shook.
You can't just say Life is a Mystery as an open... I know it's a very small part, but I suppose it's just, you know, Madonna's Hung Up samples ABBA, so it's just bringing, it's the cycle of bringing Eurovision back.
She's getting what she's giving. Gotcha.
She's taken from Eurovision, Eurovision takes from her.
And Madonna was at Eurovision in 2019, oh. So.
She did. Oh my God, let's not talk about it. I love Madonna, let's not talk about it.
You know, I get to do an episode on Madonna because she's an interval act.
Oh, that's right, you do. Jeez, that's a good episode. Oh my God, well done.
Mm-hmm. I can also do an episode on Flo Rida and ABBA and Celine Dion and Katrina and the Waves. And, I can also do the guy that did Sandstorm, Darude, the DJ that did the Sandstorm.
Amazing.
Whether famous. I can do Oscar Peterson. Oscar Peterson was an interval act in Eurovision.
I have no idea who that is, but I'm very excited.
A Canadian jazz musician.
Huh.
Yeah, he was the interval act for France in 1978. And I was like, oh.
The French have always been pilfering from the Canadians, haven't they?
Yeah, right. I just did an episode on the Eurovision Travel Guide in France. Check that out to hear my thoughts on the French.
What another good cross promotion.
I mean, I loved that song. I mean, very, very genuinely, I do like the idea behind the lyrics of that song. The idea of let's... You know, it's sort of an alien landing. Is that the premise of the song? An alien is coming down to Earth and saying hello from Mars?
Heaven is coming down from Earth to say hello from Mars, which I think implies that heaven is on Mars. And as we know from Belinda Carlisle, heaven is a place on Earth.
Okay, so let me just read the chorus here, because this is going to be the day that we will meet. When heaven comes so down to earth to say hello from Mars. I love the addition of so as well.
I'm assuming this is correct. Again, I didn't make the lyric sheet. This is from the Diggly Thresh website, which I source pretty much every week. So I'm hoping that this is accurate, but it's like when heaven comes so down to earth.
I mean, so down to earth means when heaven becomes very relatable. I don't think that's quite what they mean.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's Latvia. You know,
yeah. Well, I saw it at the end, live from Riga. Yeah,
they are hosting. They're hosting the contest after their controversial, at least controversial, according to Jack, their win in 2002. Because this is the host. This is the host entry. Like, this is Latvia's host entry. And I was like, oh, this is like really. This is what they're sending to represent them in the year. I mean, they clearly don't want to win.
That explains the cheering. That's the only reason anyone would have cheered.
This cost us so much money.
It's the only reason why anybody cheered for the song. I am forgetting this because this sounds to me like Andorra 2009, Suzanne Giorgi with the guitar, because that's all I'm thinking of is just that guitar sounding song. And I'm just like, I don't remember the song. Like, I can't even hum it now. I cannot hum Latvia 2003. And also the band name is really weird. The lyrics are wholesome, but like sickly so. Costumes, maybe they're like supposed to be future spacesuit designs, because it's just like... this weird, like, avant-garde representation of a spacesuit. I don't know. This song, it's forgettable.
Well, let's not criticize it for what it isn't, which is good, but let's criticize it for what it is, which is a song that dares to talk about what it would be like if, in my mind, alien invaders came down from Mars and they were so down to Earth and they made you cross their blade at some point.
Yeah, that's a weird lyric, isn't it? That's a weird, the blade we must cross or whatever it
the
was.
Blade we all cross, I think we all, that relatable moment when we cross a blade after the alien invaders come down from the heavens. I think it's something that all spacefaring nations have to contend with, and I'm glad that Latvia, the greatest of our, well, by the year 2100, spacefaring nations, I'm glad that they're prepared to grapple with it as a nation and that they chose to do so on their own stage. You know, that's a powerful move. It's a statement. It's not a good statement. It doesn't sound very good. But the concept, I think we need to dream loftier than good music.
That's beautiful, Justin.
And what do you think, Jack?
I think Latvia should have been banned permanently. After 2002, so honestly...
Even with Walls of the Sea? Even with Love Injected 2015?
Yeah, no, look, I take it back. I do love Latvia. Latvia 2016 is one of my favorites.
I don't remember Latvia 2016. Which one was that one?
Feeling your heartbeat.
Oh, you like
That's
that?
All
oh,
I
no,
want.
Jack, no. Why? Oh.
I think I'm in the minority on that one, but I like that one. Yeah. I don't think they, I think you guys are looking for space themed performance when they didn't even try with space themed performance. They're just wearing nice white outfits, nice and crisp and clean.
But I mean, they had the galactic background though, and they had literal star. They're like, ooh, twinkly stars.
Yeah, but I think that's where that ended.
Look, Jack, my concern is we can't really complain about people taking a gimmicky approach to discussing space.
Yeah,
because we are in the... the most fragile of glass houses here. We have to love the gimmick. We have to get into it.
I actually thought it was a really convincing performance from Latvia. I think they really, really nailed the space theming. Very, very...
one of the best songs ever.
There you go. Final question for the both of you. In the 2009 and 2022 contests, where the contests featured the astronauts during the show, they were connected from the International Space Station, whether broadcasting live or having their segments pre-recorded. As they are orbiting the Earth, and much closer to Earth compared to these hypothetical moon colony, is it possible or easier to watch the contest from the station? And do you think that they're able to actually vote from the space station since they're not physically located in a particular country? So if I'm Italian, for example, and I'm in the International Space Station, I'm not on an Italian cell network, but I am like orbiting the Earth, possibly connecting to cell towers left, right, and center. Like, is it feasible to actually televote from the International Space Station, or do people actually have to be like grounded to like a cell tower network?
I don't see why you would have any issue with voting. I mean, I think in the 2022 entry, they actually suggested she might have voted from the ISS. So I don't see why that would be an obstacle. In terms of easier to watch from the ISS, I mean, we can broadcast footage from the moon and to the moon. The main thing is there are more things to do on the moon when we set up a lunar colony than there are on the ISS, which is famously boring and uncomfortable as a day-to-day experience. Like, we get these windows into that lived experience, into that life.
I mean, is it though? They grew lettuce. They grew lettuce on the International Space Station. That, I think, is pretty cool.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You're thinking of harvesting lettuce when you think about that, not very slowly over the course of many days. The most interesting part of your day is watering a lettuce. And as well, as we previously talked about on our show, there are nastier consequences of prolonged weightlessness. You have permanent loss of bone density. We talked about SANS, which is space flight associated neuroocular syndrome.
Your eyes go crazy.
Your eyes go crazy, yeah, because your gravity is normally what keeps your brain fixed in place. The lack of gravity means your brain moves up in your head and pushes your eyes forward, and it's horrible. It's like the worst kind of nausea you can imagine. And that affects something like 70% of people that are on the ISS.
It doesn't look good either. That's the more important thing. I don't, like, your eyes are all like, oh, that's weird.
Doesn't look good, doesn't sound good. So I would imagine people on the ISS have much more incentive in a closer to completely weightless environment than on the moon, where, as we've established, they can at least be watering the moss and lichen as opposed to a lettuce.
And Jack, any thoughts on the question?
I think if an Italian astronaut is on the ISS and somehow manages to televote for Italy, good for them, you know?
I reckon it should count double.
Well, okay, we can debate that. But consider it's one person in a fun environment. I don't think anyone's going to protest if you televote for yourself.
Because I think that's the thing. It's that you're not allowed to vote for your own country. But what if you don't have a country if you like live on the ISS? Because like I know for like in realism's sake, you still keep your country citizenship unless if you're like Australian. That was really sad, by the way. Like an Australian losing their citizenship to be like in the space program, like that is weird.
Yeah. So that doesn't happen anymore, but that was one of the things that happened with our local boy, Andy Thomas, I believe.
You talked about that in an episode that I listened to not too long ago.
Yeah. So he had to give up his Australian citizenship because at the time you couldn't be a dual citizen with America, or he had to do that and in order to train as an astronaut with NASA, because Australia didn't have a space program, he became a US citizen, renounced his Australian citizenship and returned to being an Australian citizen in the 2000s at some point. I don't think you now have to do that to go up to the ISS, although maybe you would want to do that because it will allow you to vote for the Australian entry in Eurovision, which I'm sure is a much, you know, more important thing to you than being able to travel to your own country.
Then again, you can just go to Eurovision and televote for your own country. Like, I'm going to be there. I'm going to televote for Australia.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't televote for Australia. That's illegal.
No, I can do it. You're breaking the rules. I can do it. If I have a Swedish SIM card, I can do whatever the hell I feel like, except vote for Sweden.
Jack Eaton is openly admitting to breaking the rules of the European Broadcasting Union.
The moral rules, not the technical rules, the moral rules. I'm not in Australia, so I'm not voting for Australia. Of course, if we send Montaigne, I won't be voting anyway. But
I don't have this problem as a Canadian because I get to vote for whatever country I want.
That's right.
And on top of that, we have a Canadian Space Agency that, as far as I understand, we have Chris Hadfield, we have the Canadarm, I think it's what it's called, which is just a giant arm. Apparently, it's on our, like, we have it on our $5 bill. Like, we actually have our space accomplishments on our money, which is like pretty cool.
That's so cool.
You mentioned Chris Hadfield, and obviously a big fan of Chris Hadfield, because he, more than I think anyone, has done like all of that public awareness of what people are doing on the International Space Station was really led by him. He famously played a couple of Bowie songs on his guitar on the ISS, which is great. It's always nice to have the guy at a party who's like, anyway, here's Wonderwall, but in space. That's, we needed that for space communication. So big, big, big fan of Chris Hadfield. I feel like it took too long to have someone sort of relatable or as just like a friendly public face of space in the way that he has been. So, yeah, nothing but props for the guy.
Do you two have any other final comments on anything that we've seen today or any other Eurovision-related topics?
I think we have today come up with a really, really, really strong way to get the moon involved in Eurovision and televoting from the ISS. I think we've laid the groundwork here. We just need someone wealthier and probably a bit more techie than us to do the rest. But I think one day we will cross from Eurovision to the moon. Absolutely. Whether they're in it or not, might take a little longer, might be beyond my natural expectancy, though I plan on living forever.
Are you volunteering?
To live forever? Yeah, I'll live forever.
To organize Eurovision on the moon?
Absolutely not. No, 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 no. I famously have ADHD, so that is not going to work for me. Justin?
Oh, yeah. No, I'll definitely. Yeah, guys, this Eurovision thing sounds really cool. And I'm really a fan of this whole idea of like a song contest. What a cool idea. And maybe if we move that to the moon, even better, right? I'm a big fan. I think the giant spinning cone is going to require a lot of effort, so we better get started on it soon if we're going to have the Waterlooner base in Space Liverpool be the best Eurovision host we've had so far.
And one day, maybe, we'll all see you at the Waterlooner Space Arena. Waterlooner, I was defeated, you won the war. Waterlooner, you know where I'm going.
And you've definitely won the war on who is the bigger Eurovision fan, because I think we've introduced Justin to a few Eurovision entries, and I think, you know, you made a comment in the Q&A where it's like, Eurovision's going to slowly colonize the podcast and slowly colonize the rest of the world, and I think this is a continuation of that, so I appreciate your indulgence. I appreciate your experience and wisdom on both space exploration and, of course, the Eurovision Song Contest, how we can showcase entries that talk about virtually any topic that includes outer space and space theme related stuff. And so to close, I would like to give you two the floor to talk about all the wonderful things that you're doing over at the Peas Inner Network. So please tell our listeners all about the Peas Inner Network and all of the great shows that you have over there.
Fantastic. Well, you can check out the shows on the Peas Inner Network at peasinner.com.au. That's P-Z-I-N-N-E-R.com.au. NNER. We have a whole bunch of great shows. I co-founded the network with my friend Kieran, who also has been on Mates in Space a couple of times. He was the voice of, he read some poetry for us in the episodes on animals in space. And so, yeah, good fellow. We have a whole bunch of exciting podcasts for you to check out. And we're all very independent and low budget, but crushing it, obviously, as you are here on ASA 101.
And you wouldn't be able to tell the low budget, because as someone who listens to the Peas Dinner Network on a regular basis, it is high quality content with some really dedicated and fantastic people. I've got to say, in all honesty, it's one of the especially the only podcast network that I'm familiar with. So, I mean, that I don't know. I can't really compare it to other podcast networks. But it is one that has high quality, high listenability. I mean, I put it on running for hours. Sometimes running in the background. Sometimes I'm listening to it deeply. I mean, between Mates in Space, there's Best Left Forgotten. There's Please Attend Carefully. There's even some other secret episodes that kind of live in the ether that kind of sit in a little archive that I kind of listen to back on repeat, which I think you should probably revive because I want more.
We will. Well, we've got new episodes of a couple of shows coming out soon and new people joining the network all the time. So, I mean, huge props. I can't take any credit for the suite of amazing shows. We have just such a great pool of talented creators that
I'll take credit for it. It was me.
Yeah, I'm happy to be adjacent to them and give Jack all the credit for it. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, if you'd like to check out those shows and or get involved in the network, again, that is peasinner.com.au, and you can find us at peasinnerco on various social media platforms. Yeah, I'm really happy with what we have, our little baby indie darling network, and I hope if you like what we have been talking about here, obviously the way to find us is at Mates in Space on various social platforms and wherever you get podcasts.
I will say the average Mates episode has slightly less Eurovision, but I do mean slightly less Eurovision.
Very slightly.
It does lean a little bit more on the space side.
Yeah.
Compared to this episode, there is just a teensy little bit. You might notice it from time to time.
Especially compared to this podcast.
I'm sorry. I am working on it. I am getting better. And moving the show steadily away from space and towards more Eurovision stuff.
Jack, do you have anything you'd like to promote?
I do. I would like to promote world peace. And I would like to promote my new charity, which gives money to me. And you can find
sign
it.
Sign me up.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'll give you my bank details. I'll just put my bank details on the net and you guys can do that. So, you know, if you want to support a good charity that just funds my lavish lifestyle of FIFA and Golden Girls reruns, donate.
And of course, you're working on a secret project that I assume you're still keeping under wraps in the meantime.
Very, very, very soon, my friends. Very, very, very soon. And very more Eurovision. Very more Eurovision. I'll let you know.
It's exciting. Very exciting. Thank you again to Jack Eaton and Justin MacArthur of Mates in Space, a P. Zinner podcast. I will be leaving links and cross promotions all across the social network so you'll know exactly where to find these two if you want to listen to their back catalog of episodes on Mates in Space and, of course, the other shows on the P. Zinner network, which I cannot recommend any more than I already do. Thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for enlightening the listeners on space exploration and having Eurovision in space and all these wonderful things. And I hope to chat with you again soon.
It was so lovely to be here. I loved it. I loved every second of it.
Thanks so much for having us.
That was an incredibly insightful conversation we just had with Jack and Justin of the Mates in Space podcast. Seriously, go check out Mates in Space and all of the shows over on the Peas Dinner Network. They have some amazing and entertaining shows on a variety of topics. Returning to Eurovision in space, let's look at what I think is one of the most iconic acts in recent Eurovision history. This entry definitely has a connection to outer space, and I am thrilled to be opening up the 2017 entry representing Montenegro. It's Slavko Kalejic with the song Space.
Show me your superpowers. I'm Venus and Mars of the hour. I'll protect you if you come my way. Let's go to the Milky Way. I have my suit on, no need to worry. Give me your body, let's write a story. Our body language.
This entry is full of the best possible references to outer space. The lyrics are suggestive in the most bizarre way, with lyrics including, "The spaceship is ready to blow." Ooh. This song isn't really about space exploration, rather it's about exploration of the senses between two intimate people. However, the song's use of space metaphors and themes can't be ignored. Other lyrics include, "Let's explore this galaxy of stars," as well as, "I have my suit on, no need to worry," referring of course to a spacesuit, and, "I'm Venus and Mars of the hour, I'll protect you if you come my way, let's soar through the Milky Way." This is clearly akin to the leaps and bounds the singer is willing to go to fully explore this situation. Apart from the lyrics of the song, the staging and the performance have a deeply outer space theme. The LED screen is filled with dark blues and purples, dancing with stars, stellar clouds, and given the disco genre, a very light, heavy performance. There are beams of light everywhere, and it feels like you are rushing past the beauty of space as you travel at warp speed. But nothing compares with the iconic ponytail that Slavko rocks on stage. His outfit may not be proof for space travel, but this is still a fabulous look. The skirt that he starts off with feels almost regal, and of course, the reveal takes the performance to the next level. Again, the outfit has nothing to do with space travel, but this is the definition of Eurovision camp, and I think there is room for performances like this in a more serious Eurovision Song Contest. The placement of this entry is, in my opinion, a crime. This came 16th out of 18, and how this iconic performance came so low is beyond me. It was a strong semi, I will admit, and there were at least three other countries I would have preferred to have made it, mainly Georgia, Finland, and Albania, but there are only 10 spots available. I can only think of maybe two countries I would have been comfortable swapping with, and I would have put this higher. But at the end of the day, this entry is an example of a modern take of music going full force on the outer space theme. The expression of space being in such a risque manner is another example of how music can take practically any theme and transform it into something unique and thought-provoking, even if that thought is a bit on the 18-plus side. Then, of course, in an episode exploring the theme of outer space, there is one song that simply cannot be ignored. It's the one you're all thinking of. It is, of course, San Marino's 2015 entry, Chain of Lights, with that LED globe in the background. Haha, just kidding. It's the 2020s, and the pride and joy of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland struts onto the stage and brings it out of the depths of the bottom of the leaderboard. I am, of course, talking about Sam Ryder with his song, Spaceman.
And I wanna go.
Sam Ryder's song takes the feelings of depression from the 1956 entry that we discussed earlier and properly applies the outer space theme to the song. This is what Fudd should have been singing about. Quote, "If I was an astronaut, I'd be floating in midair, and a broken heart would just belong to someone else down there. I would be the center of my lonely universe, but I'm only human and I'm crashing down to Earth." This song speaks of the journey of a self-centered person realizing that their selfishness hurts others, and they have ended up alone in their own universe. They may have reached the heights of their fame and fortune, but at the cost of the things they left behind. We have come full circle back to 1956, where a man's isolation has left him desolate and desperate to a return of once was. It is a beautiful rendition and makes perfect use of the void and vacuum of space, where outside of the Earth's atmosphere truly lies nothing but the emptiness and harsh cold of isolation, looking down from a great height at the cost of leaving behind the beauty that exists at home. This song is incredible, a well-deserved second place, but I have to be perfectly candid, please don't hate me, but I do not completely share the enthusiasm that a large portion of the Eurovision fandom have on this entry. I will fully admit it's a fantastic song, definitely worthy of a top five. The UK entry for me was not my second place. I know a controversial take, and I'm sure my UK listeners are sharpening their pitchforks, but please hear me out on why. Sam's vocals are incredible, extremely well-developed and controlled, his falsetto sounds amazing, and the composition of the song is high quality. The UK sent something that is of actual quality, not just something that's safe, something that they've been doing since 2016. Musically, this isn't middle of the road for me, it's definitely in the top rankings. But the reason why this entry isn't my number two is because I simply don't get the staging. I know they wanted to do something abstract and metallic to represent the space theme, but I don't get it. Had they done away with the scaffolding and simply did a France 2021, I think I would appreciate the staging more, but I'm not mad at the UK's placement. Was this my winner? No. Was this in my top five? Yes. And that is my retrospective on the themes of outer space at the Eurovision Song Contest. There is a large variety of perspectives when referencing outer space, whether it's an expression of love, a call to rationalism, a plea for peace, or simply a desire to be amongst the stars. The Eurovision Song Contest knows no bounds for its musical expressions of literally any theme or topic you can think of, and it will continue to bring new topics to the table as humanity continues to grow, hopefully in a positive direction. Now, normally this is the part of the show where I would introduce the Eurovision Report, the segment where I announce Eurovision news for the 2024 season. However, at this point, a majority of the news is just announcements of artist reveals and national final dates, which are not only numerous, they all kind of just blend together. So I've decided to skip the Eurovision Report this week, and I'll be putting the segment on pause until I find a news article that talks about the contest that isn't related to national finals or artist reveals. One segment that will probably never pause is Song of the Week. This is the part of the show where I share Eurovision entry that I find entertaining, maybe I'm obsessing over it, or perhaps I think it should go straight into the dustbins of history, or perhaps it's simply intriguing. Let's find out which entry gets Song of the Week. This week's Song of the Week is the 2014 Georgian entry 3 Minutes to Earth, sung by The Shin and Mariko, composer Zaza Miminoshvili, lyricist Eugen Ilyu. It placed 15th out of 15 entries. That's right, it got last place with 15 points. It got 6 points from Lithuania, 5 points from Belarus, 2 points from Malta, and 1 point from Germany and Greece. This song is an example of those who are more spiritually attuned to outer space. This is basically an out-of-tune hippie love fest gone wrong, and the lyrics back up my assumption. Quote, "Lead those 3 minutes longing for love, peace and light everywhere. Show us the stairway to come back to Earth, skydivers space jump. Dress up the stairway to Earth with no sigh, rock the boat of ragged despair. Pick up all the rainbow buds from the sky, hear the chime, now's the time. 3 minutes tied to Earth for you and me, take our breath away as we fly." This song is called 3 Minutes to Earth, and one of the British commentators summed it up perfectly. 3 minutes, I'll never get back. This song has zero cohesion. It's a jumble of nonsense that has no relation to one another. It's as if each band member has taken a controlled substance and smashed together something barely resembling music. I am ripping into the song hard, and look, I'm sure these artists have a vision and a dream and took the song seriously, but the rest of us don't. This is chaos in the worst way possible, and loosely tying it to outer space is an insult to the concept of outer space itself. I think this is what Sheba back in 1981 was warning us about. Georgia somehow fell into horoscopes a little too hard and was compelled to align their performance with the constellation of Sagittarius or whatever. Look, this song gets Song of the Week because it is a reminder for us to at least have some resemblance of rationality in our music. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy some chaotic elements of music, but it has to make some sense, and this entry simply doesn't. It was fascinating to look into the history of Eurovision references to outer space, and I'm glad to have found an entry in each decade to talk about. Of course, I express my sincere gratitude and appreciation to Jack Eaton and Justin MacArthur of Mates in Space, a Peas Inner podcast. Not only is Mates in Space full of insightful commentary on outer space mixed in with a delightful side of comedy, the Peas Inner Network is full of great podcasts like Best Left Forgotten, an unofficial and uncanon D&D Forgotten Realms actual play podcast, where you can hear the Red Wizards of Thay saying, "Hello!" as well as Please Attend Carefully, a Doctor Who podcast which examines the lives of the Master. There are a bunch more podcasts which feature some amazing artists and creators, and I seriously recommend you go check out the Peas Inner catalog. I'm sure you'll find something you'll love, just like I did. I'll be leaving links to the Mates in Space podcast and the Peas Inner Network all over Instagram and the show notes for this week's episode on our website, esc101podcast.wordpress.com. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. If you'd like to get in touch with the podcast with your thoughts and comments, you can reach out to our Instagram account at ESC101podcast. You can also send us an email, ESC101podcast@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes, and please consider leaving a review so you can help make the podcast more visible to other Eurovision fans and history lovers like yourself. Your reviews go a long way in helping us to reach out to new listeners. Next week, we are returning to the Eurovision Yearbook, where we'll be covering our first band, so be sure to stay tuned to discover their story on and off the Eurovision stage. You have been listening to ESC 101. See you next time.